Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name's Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, August 21st, 2024, and today we're reading from the Big Book. We're on page 40, the third paragraph. In this frame of mind, going through the end of that paragraph, ending in not a cloud on the horizon. Today's readers are Joni C. on the 12 Steps, Susan R. on the 12 Traditions, Ken W.H. is going to be reading our text for us, Penny C. will be closing, LCM is going to be backing us up today, and our newcomer greeter is going to be Anne Marie M., and our host of the next hour is Leah S., so stand by for those too. Reference numbers for Tuesday, August 20th, 7 a.m. meeting is 21670, and the 10 a.m. is 21671. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I'm going to ask Joni C. to get us started on the 12 steps. Joni C. from Minnesota.
Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Well, thanks so much, Joni C. from Minnesota. And Susan R., would you read our 12 traditions? Susan, star one, you might have gotten muted.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, we sure can. Yeah.
All right. Susan R. In Rhode Island, reading the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Great. Thanks so much, Susan R. from Rhode Island. So how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, and then we stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your share to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we'll resume our study in the Big Book. We are on page 40, the third paragraph, beginning with, in this frame of mind, and ending with, not a cloud on the horizon. And I'll ask Ken W.H. to get us started on the reading.
Well, thank you and good morning. This is Ken W.H. from North Carolina, recovered compulsive overeater. In this frame of mind, I, Fred, went about my business, and for a time all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I had not been making too hard work of a simple matter. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. I can only be reminded of Tiny Tim singing tiptoe through the tulips. And there he is, just moseying along, tiptoeing through the tulips. Life is beautiful, absolutely perfect. I can relate to that. I love those times when I just felt perfect and all was going well. Problem is, I have to recall a story that was told by a guy a long time ago about the snake. And it was a cold, cold day, and the snake was cold, and I'm tiptoeing through my tulips, which is a flower bed where snakes might be. And the snake said, "Oh, please pick me up. I'm cold." And I said, "No, you'll bite me when you get warm." And he said, no, I promise I won't do it. And he picked up the snake and put him inside his coat. And sure enough, when the snake got warm, it bit him. And he said, "You said you wouldn't bite me." And the snake said, "You knew what I was when you picked me up." And Fred is about to come across one. And he's going to have to decide whether or not to pick it up or not. And unfortunately, he's going to pick it up. But I picked it up all the time. I believed it every time. Every time the food said to me, Ken, oh, this time will be different. You're going to be okay. Everything's fine. Aren't you feeling well? Yes, of course I am. I'm feeling great. All is going well. And every time I would buy the lie. And next thing I knew, I was in it again. I picked it up and it bit me. It always did. You would think I would learn, but the next time would come along and there I am in it again. Fred's about to get it. I know what it is when I pick it up. And that's where I stand at that choice moment. And I have the option. I can say yes or no at that point when I am abstinent. But once it starts, it's all over. And I am bitten again. I hope that isn't the case for y'all. So as you're tiptoeing through your tulips today, remember that that food is just waiting out there. Just waiting. And then you have a choice. If you're abstinent, you have a choice. Don't do it. Don't do it. I just ask you that and recommend it. Don't do it. With that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share today.
Thanks so much for getting us started, Ken W.H. Appreciate you. So now we'll have three-minute shares, and I will take a list of names. Although we value your experience, I just want to say we ask that you limit your share to every third day in an order that others might share their experience too. So give that some thought. And who would like to share today?
Jennifer
Nancy B.
Melissa
Cody
C.
Cody B.
Katie B. Hang on, give me one sec. I heard Jennifer, Nancy, Melissa, Nancy. I got Jennifer C., Nancy P., Melissa C. Sorry, who else?
Margaret
and Tony in the background.
Abby.
Roy.
Margaret G., Georgia.
Margaret, and I heard somebody right underneath Margaret.
Katie B.
Katie, I was going to guess Katie. Okay. All right, let me stop there for a sec, and we'll have more time. So don't worry if I didn't get you. It's Jennifer C., Nancy P., Melissa C., Tony B., Abby, Roy, Margaret D., and Katie B. All right, and then we'll swing back around. So let's kick off with Jennifer C., and you'll be followed by Nancy P.
Good morning. This is Jennifer C., recovered in Greenville, South Carolina. So thankful to be here this morning. Ken, thank you so much for your intro share. You know, when I read this paragraph, I think about previous recoveries, right? I had no trouble refusing drinks. We work the steps, we get recovered, we have neutrality, right? It's neutrality. Finally, we're in a recovered state. What we've been working towards, and the food is not calling our name, thank God, and we think we're never going to go back. We can't imagine ever going back. And then time goes by, and we start to wonder if we're not making too hard work of such a simple matter, right? Like, just don't eat, right? I've got neutrality. It's that simple. Just don't take that first bite. And the problem is I stopped taking my medication. So the things that I did to get recovered suddenly seem unnecessary. And I begin to slack off because it seems like it's pretty simple, right? And I do the bare minimum. I'm sponsoring, I'm making calls, but I'm doing the bare minimum and I'm letting my feelings run the show once again instead of following this simple program, very simple, but not easy. And so for today, you know, I'm so grateful for my previous times where I was in a recovered state and began to think that I didn't need to do the things that I did to get recovered. And today I know that I have to do more than what I did to get recovered, because the ego and the disease are always there to convince me that I'm different and I don't need to do the same things that all of you need to do. It's always there waiting to get me and take me down. So the simplicity of this message of just remembering to take my daily meds, regardless of what my brain tells me I don't need or need, just take them anyway. Do the things that I needed to do to get recovered, and even multiply it. Do double, right? So that I can stay spiritually fit and serve others. So with that, I pass.
Now, thanks so much. Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Nancy P. from Massachusetts, you're up. And you'll be followed by Melissa C. Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for letting me share. Nancy P. recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. So I love this paragraph. In this frame of mind, I went about my business, and for a time all as well. I mean, I've been there too. We've all, you know, everybody's going to share, or, you know, a lot of people will share about that. You know, 9 a.m. Monday, I'm ready to go. I got my whole day planned, and, you know, all is well. I have no trouble refusing food, and then begin to wonder if I had not been making too hard a work of a simple matter. You know what time it is? 9:15 for me. I mean, if that. Like, as soon as I would make this decision, in quotes, I'd be like, nah, I get that. That's no problem. You know, I might as well have, you know, I might as well just binge my brains out. I mean, my own sponsor told me that if she stopped doing this stuff, it would be a matter of days. And for me, it's been literally my lived experiences. It was a matter of minutes before I was back in the food. So my problem is not to try to figure out a way to remember how not to make that decision. It's I need to not even be there ever. My brain needs to change so that I don't think that. Like, I never, ever, ever think about buying 50 green sweaters, ever. Ever in my life, I have never thought that. I need to figure out a way to make my brain never, ever think about taking the first compulsive bite or taking, you know, eating anything that's going to hurt me or hurt myself with food. I don't really like the word abstinence, but I don't want to hurt myself with food. And the only way to do that for me is to change my brain. And today I can honestly say that I never, ever, ever think about food in terms of hiding, sneaking, cheating, and lying, picking and licking. I don't think that way about food anymore. I think about food a lot because do I have enough stuff for the salad and vegetables and all that type of thing? And what are we having for dinner this week? You know, I do think about it, and I go to the grocery store frequently. But in terms of that sneaky, compulsive-y, yucky, like oozy, you know, rotted brain thinking, brain mindset, I'm not there anymore. And the reason I'm not is because my recovery, I mean, I have never been able to approach this head on. I can go to a billion meetings and it's not going to help me. I can get a sponsor. I tell my sponsees this. I can get a sponsor that's so mean she'll dump you if you sneeze instead of cough. And, you know, that never helped me. What helped me was one thing and one thing only. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And today, it's a working part of my mind. I have no trouble ever with food. And with that, I'll pass.
Great. Thanks, Nancy P. from Massachusetts and Melissa C. from New York. You are up. You'll be followed by Tony B.
Hey, good morning, Barbara. Thanks so much for your service this morning. Always good to hear you. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, you know, the purpose of this chapter is really given to us, you know, in the last paragraph, where it says, you know, basically it's really to drive home the fact that for alcoholics, you know, for a true compulsive overeater like myself, my defense has got to come from a higher power. It can't come from keeping on guard, because at certain times my human power is going to fail me. And, you know, and then there's this paragraph where it says, and this frame of mind, and what was his frame of mind, you know, that his success in life, that his ability to overcome, like, all his difficulties, that Fred, like, he looked around and he's like, I'm not as bad as you other guys, you know, that maybe a little bit superior, I haven't sunk so low, and that he could use his willpower to keep on guard. And, You know, and so it talks about, like, not a cloud in the horizon, because I think guards, you know, they kind of scan the horizon looking for problems, you know, sort of looking out there. And the problem is that I don't notice the problem because I can't scan the horizon. Actually, what I need is a mirror because I'm the problem. I'm what I need to keep on guard against, you know. And, you know, if I understand that hard days are something you might need to kind of fight against, but how do you fight against a perfect day? Like, what could you possibly do to stay on guard against that, you know, when everything is going great? Like, of course you're not going to be on guard. Of course you're going to relax and ease. And so the only solution for someone like me is to remove the danger entirely of the thing that I fear, you know, and how do I do that? I can't enter a world where food doesn't exist. I live amongst people, right? What it is that I need to be reformed. I need to be remade. I need to be reborn. I need to be recovered so that I don't desire the thing that I would need to be on guard against. And that to me is, that can only come from a higher power. I have used my willpower in so many areas, but I cannot use my willpower to not want something, right? I can say, okay, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. But to actually be a person who in good times and in hard times, I'm not interested in food. And the only thing that has done that, and I know my time is up, is a spiritual awakening that the next chapter is really going to, you know, inform us on what that is. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa C. from New York. And Tony B., you are up. You'll be followed by Abby. Abby will give us your last initial when you come up. So, Tony B., you're up.
Thank you, Barbara, for your service. My name's Tony B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, very grateful, in Scotland. So willpower didn't work for me for periods of time. Sorry, willpower did work for me for periods of time, I mean to say. I have a strong will, certainly, and my family would comment on it. They'd see me lose weight and see me refusing things and say, gosh, you've got a strong will, very abstemious, well done. Now I go about my business refusing my alcoholic foods. I decide on a plan and knuckle down to it. For long? No, never for long. Sometimes it was a good enough to keep me slim plan, restricting and binging and over-exercising. Never sane, looking back. And Fred here demonstrates that it doesn't have to be an emotional upset or an unusual change of environment. He'd been out of town before, or a failure or a mistake. His business came off well. He wasn't sick or unhappy. Nothing was worrying him. So it's demonstrating the strange mental blank spot that can come at any time. And what was Fred doing? He was doing his stuff. He was doing his business. He was wrapped up in his pride and his ambition. I was making too hard work of this. You know, I'm pretty good. I can do this. It's easy. And he says, I was pleased. You know, his pleasure, his well-being is dependent on his achievements. And where's God here? You know, he's not trying to please God. He's not trying to help others. And this is a very ordinary way of living. Most people do live like this. I'm well, I'm comfortable, I'm successful, so I'm happy. But I, as a compulsive overeater, can't live like that anymore. Things go well, I have to be vigilant and stick to God. Things go badly, I have to be vigilant and stick to God. And it's been said already this morning, I have to change. I can't be my old self and add on abstinence. I've got to have an entire psychic change and rely on God, who has removed my obsession. So I'm just so grateful to be here, be able to listen to all these shares on Fred's story. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Tony B. from Scotland. And let me just repeat where we're at for those of us who've joined us. We're on page 40 in the big book, third paragraph. In this frame of mind, and ending with "Not a cloud on the horizon." So, Abby, you are up, and you'll be followed by Roy.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. My name is Abby D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, bulimic, in Michigan. And what this paragraph is bringing up for me is I heard recently, like, the difference between a habit and a ritual. And I'm not talking about like a religious ritual, but a non-religious ritual. And it's the difference is, like, a habit is like, okay, I brush my teeth every morning. But if someone told me, like, to change the time that I brush my teeth, like, or the way, you know, the order of which I brush my teeth, like, it wouldn't bother me. I'd be like, okay, whatever. But a ritual is, like, something that I really don't like to be changed around. Like, it's really important to me. And so prayer and meditation in the morning is one of those things that I do. And I think about, like, giving 30 minutes in the morning to prayer and meditation. And that's one thing that I do no matter what. So it's like, you know, Fred was feeling good, and, you know, some days I'm feeling good too. And I could easily be like, oh, I don't need this today. But it's like I do it anyways, because it's these routines and these rituals that I put in place every day that create the barrier between me and compulsive eating and open my channel to God. And I'm thinking about also my recovery is like a Jenga. Like, Jenga is that game where you place a bunch of little rectangular prism blocks on each other, and you stack them up higher and higher, and then you remove one and put it back on top, and as you remove them, like, you try to not have it come tumbling down, and when it comes tumbling down, the other team wins. Well, my recovery is like a Jenga game. Like, I have all these little things that I do throughout the day that keep me in channel with God and safe from compulsive eating. And I don't exactly know which one, if I, you know, I can remove one here and there, but there's going to be that one that it comes tumbling down. And so, like, for me, it's important, all of it. Like, everything I do to build my spiritual experience, or, like, build my relationship with God, like, whether that's, like, non-negotiable prayer or meditation every morning, meeting, sharing, service, sponsoring, you know, the fellowship, phone calls, like, at some point, if I start removing those things, I don't know exactly where, but I'm going to eventually be unarmed from the disease of compulsive eating. And just remembering that this whole program is all about building a relationship with God. Like, I'll take out anything else out of my day except the things that are going to keep me close to God. So, yeah, it's just a really good paragraph. But today I want to stay armed with
time,
the barrier between me and compulsive eating, and with that I pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Abby B. from Michigan. Roy, you are up, and you'll be followed by Margaret D.
Thanks so much. This is Troy C. from Florida. I'm pretty sure it was me you were looking for, but I do know there is a Roy I found out a couple of days ago. So just in case Roy's out there, just cut me off, man. Anyway,
no,
Troy C.
I think it's you, Troy. We just always call you Roy. I don't know.
No problem. All right. Troy C., compulsive reader from Florida. Yeah, I mean, this is such a great section. I love how we go through the book and vision. My story is analogous to Fred's because, you know, the early members of AA came to him and explained alcoholism to him, and he found it interesting but didn't really think it applied to him. And for years, I read this book in another fellowship, and it occurred to me right away that, oh, I don't know, my eating kind of seems like this too. My drinking for sure, but my eating, huh? And I couldn't, for many years, like Fred here, I didn't think I was that bad. I didn't think I had to go to such an extreme, you know, and I would go about my business. I would get into a diet, you know, I would do Nutrisystem or keto or whatever. And for a period of weeks or months, I would be fine. And in that frame of mind, I would be totally capable of turning down the donuts and pizza and whatnot. And life would often be going very well. I would be losing weight. I would be getting, attention from women and compliments from coworkers and my family, you know, when they would see me after not seeing, oh, you're losing so much weight. Everything's going great. And knowing in this frame of mind that I had never successfully started eating pizza again without it turning into a whole fiasco, I would have some insanely trivial excuse or no thought at all that I would be able to control it this time, just like, you know, Fred's about to go and get a cocktail or whatever. And sometimes my initial experiment would work. I mean, it all falls apart really quickly for Fred. And that totally happened to me as well. But sometimes it wasn't that explosive. Sometimes I did only have 3 slices of pizza that night and 3 slices the next night and 3 slices the night after that. But inevitably, in, you know, days, weeks, or months, it would become all-consuming all over again. And I would, you know, have to do the mental gymnastics of why it didn't work out, if I attempted to at all. You know, sometimes I was just so wound up in it. The only thing that has actually given me a defense is a relationship with God. And I don't know why the relationship with God that I had in another program those credits didn't transfer. I can't explain why. I do know that I've, you know, been abstinent for coming up on 6 months now. And the freedom that I feel from food is different than when I was doing keto or one meal a day or whatever. Name the diet, I've done it. I don't know why this is different. The benefits transfer obviously to other parts of life as well. The way I interact with the people around me, my coworkers, my romantic partner, you know, like it's an incredible experience. That's all I have to say. Thanks for letting me share.
Great. Thank you, Troy. And we appreciate your share. Margaret D., you are up from Georgia. You go, girl.
Thanks, Barbara. Hey, everybody. Good morning. Margaret D., Georgia. I'm going to go back to the paragraph before this for just a half a second where he says, I felt I had every right to be self-confident and that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. That was the attitude that I had for the first 30 years that I was in program. And there were so many times that I felt like just putting my head through a wall because I was crazy and I felt crazy. And I couldn't understand what was wrong. Why was this not working? And that's the frame of mind. Now, coming to this paragraph, in this frame of mind, I went about my business. And for a time, all was well. And as we heard earlier, sometimes that was like 15 minutes. Sometimes maybe it was a day and a half, whatever. I have to, which is really such a paradox, I have to remember my real reason for existing or whatever is to do God's will. And it's not about the weight. It's not about, although it certainly is about the sanity, that's for sure. And so the only thing that I know to do is to keep focusing all of my energy on building the new, if you will. What does God want for me to do today? How am I supposed to be today? How can I practice being sober, considerate, and helpful today? And when I don't do that, I can get away maybe a week, you know, maybe 2 days, whatever. But I guarantee you that what I'm doing is fighting the old. I'm slipping back into, I can do this on my own. I have every right to be self-confident. All I've got to do is exercise my willpower, blah, 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 blah. And I always end up, you know, that suddenly the thought came into my mind that it would be nice to have fill in the blank with whatever the food would be or whatever. Or even more so than that,
time.
I could, and I'll just pass with this, that I can enjoy a resentment or being selfish or self-centered or whatever, because I can get away with it this time, but it's always going to result in me compulsively eating. And with that, I pass.
Thanks. Margaret D. from Georgia. And Katie B., you're up, and after Katie, we'll be taking another list of names. So, Katie, you are up.
Hi, good morning. This is Katie B. in New York. The shares have been exactly what I needed to hear, so thank you to everybody who's previously shared and for everyone doing service. I'm just looking at the paragraph. So in this frame of mind, this has been said, right? What is he doing? What am I doing? I'm exercising my willpower. Well, that has not worked well for me historically. And I go about my business, and for a time, all is well. What's my business, right? Thinking that I've got this. Thinking that this diet is the answer, thinking I don't need a meeting or I don't need to check in with God, becoming God. And those are dangerous places for me to be in, dangerous mindsets. Because I love, you know, when I'm, as was previously shared, I am the problem. So how am I supposed to be on guard against myself when I am the snake in the garden and my best ideas and my worst ideas all sound like me? So it's troublesome. It's a hard place to be without God as my God, without God, my higher power, intervening for me on my behalf. So, you know, I've been abstinent. I've dieted. All those things have been great for a time. But unless I've done a thorough step one, unless I understand the doctor's opinion and apply it to me, and unless I have my higher power, I can't tell the truth from the lie. You know, I do need to understand the allergy. I do need to understand I cannot drink like normal men, no matter how much time goes by. And I need God's intervention to restore me to sanity, because otherwise things are going to go well and my disease, my, you know, me, I'm the snake, right? And I sound perfectly rational. I'm going to suggest that I try something that I've tried 1,000 times before, and my insanity, my mental blank spot, will overlook that in decades of trying, I've never successfully eaten one cookie or the pizza, as was mentioned. And even if I can have it, you know, in moderation for a day or a few weeks, I have always ended up face down in the food. So I need more than a diet to overcome this. So I need to take those 12 steps to God. I need to continuously work on my relationship with God. And then the grace of my higher power is going to do for me what I can't do for myself. Because when I just go about my business, I'm in trouble. And I love the Jenga analogy too, because how many things am I going to let slide in my program, in my recovery work, until all of my pieces, all of my life is back on the floor, you know? So just thank you to all the fellows that have shared so far and for everyone just being here at this meeting. This is part of our recovery journey, and I'm just grateful to be on it with everyone. And have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, Katie B. from New York. All righty. Well, we are on page 40, third paragraph in this frame of mind, and then ending in that paragraph, not a cloud on the horizon. So let me go ahead and take a few more names. We still have time.
Riska R.
Patrick O.
Baltimore.
Riska, Patrick, gotcha.
Anieta R. from Texas.
Anieta, gotcha.
Jane G. from New York.
I'm sorry, who from New York?
Jane G.
Jane G. Okay, gotcha. Let's stop there, and I think that's who we'll have time for. We may be able to
Donna
add
M.
one or two. We'll see. Was it Donna? I'll put you on the end of the list,
yes.
Donna. Not sure. Yeah, not sure if we'll have time or not, but we'll see what we can do. So, Rivka R., you are up, and you'll be followed by Patrick O.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Barbara, for your service and all the great chair today. This is Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. My thinking was like Fred, a few times that I thought, I'll just eat protein and vegetables for the rest of my life and I'll be fine. And I would leave program and maybe my resolution would last a day and maybe not even. But really, I really thought that food was a simple matter. I mean, it was not a simple matter for me. I have a mind that was always obsessed about food from a very early age. I really needed a miracle, and I need to renew that miracle every day. I was listening last night to a talk that my sponsor had emailed me of an AA speaker, Sandy B., and he was talking about the three pertinent ideas. And I'm a substance compulsive overeater for alcoholic and I for we, but I am a compulsive overeater and I could not manage my own life, that probably no human power could have relieved my compulsive overeating, and that God could and would if he were sought. And he said he thought it ended with God could and would, but it says if he were sought. And he asked, what does it mean to seek God? And he said that when he was a child, he would play hide and seek, and his maximum seeking capacity would last for 3 minutes before he would lose interest. And one time his mother hid a pound of assorted chocolates in the house and told him that if he found them, he could have them. And he said he sought those for maybe 10 or 11 minutes before he lost interest. And I laughed out loud, and I thought, 10 or 11 minutes? Like if I knew a pound of assorted chocolates were hidden in the house, whether my mother told me I could have them or not, I would never lose interest. Like I would take the house apart to find those things. If I sought God with half as much energy as I sought chocolate, I'd be doing great. And that's what the 12 steps offers me. It prepares me to receive the miracle of not looking for those chocolates anymore. And it clears the way and connects me with the real truth and value in life. And so I can seek the right thing one day at a time. And I'm so grateful. And thanks, everybody, for being here. And I pass.
Thanks, Rivka R. Patrick O., you're up, and you'll be followed by Hanietta R.
Good morning, Patrick O. from Tennessee, a recovering compulsive eater. I'm really grateful to be here and grateful to hear these shares. I was thinking about the reward syndrome, I would call it, I guess, how many times I've relapsed by rewarding myself because I've had a good day, and I've done that over and over again. And I've been absent now about 7 months, and I've been wondering, like, what's a little different this time? And again, this time with Vision for You is the way my sponsor worked with me was working through the doctor's opinion, and I'm a lot more aware of the phenomena of craving and the powerlessness I have in the first step around my food and my food behaviors. Then the other thing is the opposite of addiction is connection, I guess, because what I've been doing the last 7 months when I'm aware of wanting to eat at even good times, I make phone calls. I reach out to people and say, hey, I'm having this thought about food. And then I kind of it helps to me. That's my way of connecting with a higher power, is working with others. And with that, I will end by saying I am available to sponsor and my name is on the list. But that is what's been helping me for the last 7 months, is just to continue being connected with the meetings and reaching out to people. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much, Patrick O. from Tennessee. Hanietta R., you are up, and you'll be followed by Jane G.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your service. My name is Hanietta R. from Texas. And I do like outreach calls, and my name is the only name, Hanietta, in the numbers list. So this, I really love going through the big book like this. as so many people have already said and always say, but it really keeps me so connected. And I wanted to also thank Ken WH, because what he said was like, right, I mean, you know, tiptoe through the tulips. I don't know, some people may not be old enough to remember Tiny Tim, but it really got me. And the snake, you know, I know it's a snake. Every time I go to pick something, so, and I knew it in the past. And I've been in programs for many decades, but thank you, God, that this coming weekend, if I make it one day at a time, I'll have 9 months of abstinence, which I didn't think I'd get back again last November. I didn't think I'd ever come back. But I did, and I'm so grateful that I did, because no matter what it says in any of these pages, what I know is that I have to take the I out and not make it an ego trip, but only when I talk about myself, that I have to surrender to a power greater than myself. So no matter how perfect my day is or how beautiful the day was, you know, or if I've been abstinent for a long time, even 10 years, I can't put down the fact that I'm not doing this myself, that God is doing this for me. God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. And it's a miracle. It's all a miracle. I'm a miracle. You all are miracles out there. And whether you're abstinent or not abstinent, recovered or not recovered, you are a miracle. And just let God in if you haven't, or a higher power, it doesn't have to be God, but some power greater than yourself, and you will see the miracles in your life. I see miracles every single day. Everything around me is a miracle. And and don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle, and we never know when that's going to be. But guess what, guys? If you haven't gotten a miracle, there's one waiting out there for you. So open your
hands.
Thank you. I'll just finish with open your hands and let it in. Thank you so much for letting me share. I pass.
Great. Thanks, Hanietta R. And Jane G. from New York, you're up. And Donna, we will have time for you for sure. So, Jane, you're up.
Thank you so much. My name is Jane G. from Texas, currently in New York. So grateful for this meeting, so grateful for your service and for all those who've shared. I was recovered for several years and relapsed for a couple of years, and am back working the program, hopefully like my hair is on fire, and beginning my 12-step work, actually, I think today, in just a little while with my sponsor. When I think, I love Fred, I am Fred, the I's, 8 times I is mentioned. He says I in this paragraph. And when I came back into program several months ago, I was at a normal body weight and, you know, a particular dry spell, which I've heard one of our fellows talk about is a diet. Yes, a particular dry spell was a diet. When I came back into program, I was at a normal body weight, and I said, well, I am so besotted with the obsession of the mind, and I don't have the relationship, I don't have the power to remain abstinent, to remain abstinent. And being at a normal body weight is when the disease just whispers sweet nothings into my ears, and it's cunning, and it's baffling. And as I began the step work this time, I remember a sponsor saying to me that each step brings me closer to God. And it is the miracle of this program that to become protected by and under God's protection, which I had never been when I was dieting. relying on willpower. The obsession of the mind is so powerful. I'm powerless over it, and I'm just so grateful to my sponsor, to my fellows, to this program, and most especially to God for guiding me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jane G. from Texas. Donna M., you're up. Tell us where you're calling from.
From Toronto.
Donna? Oh, there you go, Donna. We got you. Yeah.
I'm Donna M. from near Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And the last time I was out of program, I had picked up something and hadn't triggered the phenomenon of craving. So I thought I was making too big a deal out of it. And I stayed out for a year and a half. And at some point, the cravings and the binging started. And when I came back, it took me another 10 years to recover, because I continued to hold on to eating behaviors like as licks, bites, and tastes. And if I'm doing that, I'm getting an effect from the food, and I can't have that spiritual awakening that I need to have a relationship with my higher power. So I remained in an unrecovered state for 10 years after coming back. I'm so grateful today to have 4.5 years of recovery and to have peace with the food and to know that my relationship with my higher power is the most important thing. Thank you for the opportunity to share today.
And thank you, Donna M. from Toronto. Yeah, we appreciate your share, and you left time on the clock too. So, to who else? We have time for one last share. Who would like that?
Sarah G. from New Jersey.
Okay, you got it. Go for it.
Okay. Thank you for all of your shares. They were, like, so relatable. And I came into this thinking that I was a little bit different than everybody else, and I could do this differently, like so many people have thought. But now I'm seeing that I just needed to surrender, and as long as I stayed surrender to God's will for me, I was able to keep the food where it belongs. And I see that I'm reminded of my disease when I see other people eating, and I'm like, how are they just eating like that and being okay and stopping when they stop, and they just, and it reminds me, oh, because I am different, and it's okay that I'm different. I just have to keep, you know, knowing that my will has to be God's will and what he wants for me, and just surrender to whatever it is, whatever my sponsor says is, and it's okay. And there's days where I feel down when there's not a cloud in the sky, and I don't even know why. Why should I feel bad? Why am I feeling down? And I just think about, like, what's God's will for me today? What does he want me to do? Usually it's helping someone else in some way. And literally, I'm lifted. My spirits are lifted to a happier place. Not only is my food kept in its place, but I'm feeling in a much happier place and so grateful for this miracle of just being able to pull myself, not pull myself, but letting God pull me out of any kind of sad feelings that I have. And I just want to thank all of you. Your shares are always so inspiring. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Sarah G. from New York. All right. So thank you to everyone who shared today. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following our closing. The share ID today for this particular meeting is 21677. That was a share ID for the 7 a.m. meeting, 21677. So we'll now close with a reading from the Big Book. And let's see, that's on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So today we're going to have Penny C. read our closing, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only through Keep You Until Then. Penny, step right up.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Barbara. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.